So as Alejandro said, this presentation is going to be on cotton market integration. We're looking at, when we talk about integration, for those of you who may not be familiar with some time series concepts, we're taking a look at the interrelationship between cotton prices around the world, and want to see how stable those relationships have been across different cotton qualities and also through time. We do think that there may be potentially a take home on the applied side here, and that we're taking a look at the stability of some basis values for different growths around the world. And we also hope that there may be a little bit of methodological take home as well, in some of the ways that we sliced and diced the data. The reason why we're interested in doing this is because there has been some limited analysis of cotton market integration. The only real study that we're aware of that has focused in on cotton market integration for cotton is that from Bathus, who is a time series and cotton researcher with the WTO. In a paper he published early in the 2000s, he compared prices during a certain time period in the late 1980s with a set of prices from those in the late 1990s. That was a relatively long time ago, and there have been some pretty significant changes in the world cotton market since then. One of those has been the concentration of global mill use in Asia. So you take a look at the time period that we had in the late 1990s and where we have been for the most recent five crop years. We've seen an increase of about 20 percentage points in terms of the percentage of world consumption located in Asia. At the same time, we see mill use increase in Asia. We've also seen Asia's share of world imports increase relatively dramatically, moving up more than 25 percentage points between the late 1990s and recently. So we have seen a lot of changes since the last study, and to address some of those changes, we thought it was time to maybe conduct another analysis. In addition to all that, we've had the unprecedented volatility in 2010-2011. There may be some questions regarding whether price relationships that have existed previously would hold up with the extreme volatility we had over the past couple crop years. So we're taking a look at all these questions in the research that I will be sharing with you right now. Primary goals were to update analysis of market integration, take a look at relationships among different countries and also some different qualities of cotton, and to see any changes that may have taken place since 2004-2005 crop year. Sort of the theoretical basis for all this, when you take a look at investigations of market integration, you probably need some theoretical reason to think that prices should be related. You take a look at the cotton market, a reason for that probably is the fact that it is so global. So you take a look at the proportion of harvests that are exported. Cotton ranks number two, only behind soybeans, with about one-third of the world's cotton crop being put on a boat and sent somewhere. So given the fact that so much of the world's cotton crop is exported, you probably should expect there to be some relationship among the world's different cotton prices. Just a little bit more into the theory regarding market integration. What I have here is just sort of a hierarchy of some of the concepts related to market integration adapted from the guidebook that Fackler and Goodwin put out in 2001. At the top of this chart, you see the strong law of one price. Essentially, when we talk about market integration in terms of the laws of one price, we're focused in on that RIJ term, which is commonly referred to as transport costs in the agricultural economics literature. But in the context of the cotton market, I think that RIJ term is pretty important because it can be interpreted as the basis, and that, once again, is a focus that we have in this project. When we take a look at how we're going to be testing our econometrics here, we're going to be focusing in on the strong law of one price. We're adopting the same set of techniques that Bathus used in his study back in 2001. What we are going to be doing is just testing the stationarity of that transport cost term or of the basis. We'll be using some time series methods to do that. Once again, a question that we're trying to address is whether the market became more or less integrated over time, or have we seen any changes over the past several crop years. The methods that we'll be using is basically just some preliminary methods that you use in time series analysis. We'll be just taking a look at the stationarity of that RIJ term, of that transport cost term. We use three different tests here. All of these are commonly used in practice. We use the augmented Dickey Fuller test, which is probably the most commonly used. We also use the Phillips-Perrone test, which is really pretty similar to Dickey Fuller in terms of how it's applied and some of the assumptions that are involved. We also wanted to include the KPSS test. I'm not going to try and pronounce any of those names there. But the reason why I want to take a look at the KPSS test is because the burden of proof shifts to the other side of the fence. So when you take a look at ADF test, the assumption is that there is a unit root, or that the series is non-stationary. When we take a look at the KPS test, we put the burden of proof on the other side. We assume that it is stationary, and then we have to disprove that stationarity. And that leads to some differences in results that we'll take a look at later. So we talked about how we sort of set things up. There certainly is an important temporal element to all of this. We did take a look at some discrete timing in terms of the frames we're looking at. One of those was just the entire sample that we have. We used monthly data from the beginning of the 2004 or 2005 crop year all the way through to the present, which is December of 2012 with the latest data. So we did our stationary test during this entire sample. We also broke it up in terms of pre-spike, the pre-spike period, which we defined as before the 2010-2011 crop year. And then we also take a look at the time period that was inclusive of that spike. So we moved on from 2010-2011 as well. In addition to these sort of discrete time periods, what we're calling them, we also took a look at some time in a continuous fashion. The way we did that was by taking a look at some rolling windows. So we took a look at rolling windows of 36 months, 48 months, and 60 months. And we conducted our tests through time, sliding it through this entire sample to see if we got different results in terms of those stationarity tests we were talking about. All right, so some of the prices we looked at, we essentially looked at two different sets of prices. The first of those were just some of the international benchmark prices. Once again, we're trying to frame this in an applied context, taking a look at differences in these prices relative to the New York Nearby. So we've been comparing the differences between New York Nearby prices and A-Index prices, the difference between New York Nearby prices and Chinese prices, as well as some spot prices in India and China. Just to walk you through some of the results that we have here. Here we'll take a look at our discrete samples. Start out by taking a look at the entire sample here. So from the onset of 2004-2005 all the way through the present, take a look at the average difference between New York Nearby prices and these several prices here. You can see them. Those negative numbers indicate that those spot prices from India and Pakistan were lower than New York future prices. We applied our stationarity tests. All these were conducted at the 5% level, something that we can play with in the future, and it's something we may probably would like to play with in the future as we get a little bit deeper into our discussion of results. If you take a look at the ADF and PP tests, what you can see is that generally across these benchmark prices, we saw that basis term or that transport cost term was non-stationary. The sole exception was the A-index with the Phillips-Perrone test. Once we shifted gears a little bit, once again we changed our assumptions, or we changed the burden of proof from either being stationary or being non-stationary, we go to the KPSS test. You can see we do have some more evidence of that price difference being stable, with Indian and Pakistani prices having a constant, or some evidence of a constant stationarity relationship with New York futures prices. Here's the other two discrete time periods we look at, and when we introduce this data to you, you can see that the differences that we've seen between these different testing methods become a little bit more obvious. When we change that assumption or the burden of proof, once again, from stationarity to non-stationarity, you can see that we do have different interpretations. So when we use the KPSS test, things look a lot more stable than they do if we use the ADF or the PP test. So that was sort of our discrete results. Once again, a focus of this analysis was to take a look at some of the temporal elements. We want to take a look at the changes over time. So what we did, once again, with these rolling windows, to walk you through some of these data that we'll be looking at in the charts here. That gray period is the 2010-2011 crop year, which is a time period we had very extreme volatility. The gray line that you're taking a look at, that's the average over these 36-month periods that we're sliding through time. And those blue dots, or the blue lines that you'll see a little bit later, those are those time periods when we saw stationarity or stability in terms of prices in those windows. So you see for A-index New York Nearby, in terms of the ADF test, we see not a lot of evidence in terms of stationarity in terms of those price differences. Take a look at some other prices from our benchmarks. What you can see is that the only really evidence that we have in terms of ADF tests, when we have a window of 36 months, is for Pakistani prices with New York prices. changing things around a little bit, just playing with the size of the window that we're rolling through time. Take a look at a 48-month window. We really don't see any evidence of stationarity when we use our ADF test. Similar situation, we increase that window size a little bit further, taking a look at our 60-month windows. Once again, we didn't see a lot of difference between our ADF test and our Phillips-Perrone test, but we did see some pretty significant differences when we changed our assumptions and used our KPSS test. What you can see is that we see a lot more evidence of stationarity when we just change our definition in terms of how we're defining stationarity. With these data, we can see that, you know, New York prices, or difference between New York prices and the index prices, is pretty constant. We take a look at the difference between Chinese prices and Indian prices. You can see we do have some stationarity, although we do have a gap, and that whole coincides probably with a lagged effect of that 2010-2011 time period on our test results. So just taking a look at the different time windows that we have for our KPSS test, still pretty similar results. Evidence of stationarity for our relationship between New York futures and A-index prices. We have that gap between our stationary tests in terms of Chinese prices and Indian prices, as we saw in the previous chart. Same general pattern holds up when we change our window back to 36 months. So what we're really seeing here is a difference in terms of which test we're applying, and we're seeing that having a larger effect in terms of how we define it temporally. So we take a look at sort of our results over these benchmark prices. We don't really see a lot of evidence in terms of stationarity of our transport cost term. That maybe could be expected because we're, to a certain extent, comparing apples to oranges, and that we're taking a look at U.S. prices or New York nearby prices, and which is based on an export-dominant market, and comparing those to markets where they have a lot more domestic consumption relative to their production. So what we may want to do is just take a look at some other countries that export a much larger proportion of their crop, that are more dependent on exports, and since they are competing for that import market located in Asia, we may expect them to have a higher degree of integration or interrelationships. So we can do that by taking a look at some of our Kotluk quotes. What we have here are quotes for the different grades from Kotluk that had at least 85% monthly coverage. Sometimes you get holes in that data from 2004, 2005 to the present. Those quotes that do have at least 85% coverage are those that are shown here. We don't have good coverage all the way through. The only country that we do have data for high, medium, and low grades is the U.S. So that is somewhat of a limitation that we have in terms of our comparison of prices across different qualities. Once again, my goal is not to beat you guys to death with the data that we have produced here. We will have a lot more results in the paper than I think are appropriate to share in a PowerPoint. But essentially, everything that we did for the benchmark prices, we also did for these quality prices in terms of the analysis that we did temporarily. However, the only results I'm going to show you here are those that we have for these discrete time periods. We take a look at this data, what we see relative to New York futures, we don't see a lot of evidence of stationarity of the basis or of these transport cost terms over time. Some of the close relationships we do see in terms of New York futures are for Australian prices. Of course, Australia hedges a lot of its cotton using New York futures, so you may expect there to be some stability in terms of the basis there. Also seeing some stability in terms of Brazilian prices. But I think it is interesting the fact that we don't see stability of the basis in terms of the Kotluk quotes for U.S. cotton qualities relative to New York futures. One reason for that may have to do with the fact that futures have gotten more expensive over time. Some of those costs, including the costs of margin calls, may be affecting the stability of the relationship between U.S. export quotes and U.S. futures prices. Here we are just changing our time period. Take a look at the time period before the spike. When we do that, you see a lot more evidence of stability, as you might expect. What we can see here, once again, is the fact that we do see some differences in terms of the relationships or the results we get depending on which test we use, with the KPSS test being a lot easier to prove stationarity than the ADF and PP tests. Similar situation, we take a look at what's going on after the price spike. We take a look at what's going on after a price spike. We're seeing some stability in terms of KPSS test results once again. So what we may be missing here when we take a look at the entire time period We're seeing a lot of evidence of non-stationarity, and then we see this evidence of stationarity in terms of pre and post, is that there was a transition period. Once we got past that transition period, we have seen some stability move back into the market. So the conclusion is sort of how to draw everything together. Our price is integrated. The relationship really is inconsistent across different price pairs, and it really depends in a large degree in terms of how market integration is defined. We can see how the application of different tests results in different results. Future work, we're going to continue our co-integration testing. We don't have any dynamic time series regression results in here. That's something that we will be working on and may have done in time for the paper. Something else that we expect to do in the future is to apply this same set of research methods to other areas in the cotton market. We think that this same set or the same approach could be appropriate to take a look at the difference between fiber prices and yarn prices to see if that margin has been stable over time or not. So plenty more work to do. But with that, I'm all done. And we've got a business meeting after, but otherwise, welcome any questions you might have.
Thank you, John.